Hi, welcome to episode number 11 of the Audio Engineers podcast with me, Streaky, and...
me, Shay.
And today we're going to be discussing compression. So I'll obviously be dealing with mastering compression, and Shay will be dealing with recording and mix compression. So, Shay, you can kick off, seeing that you've got a cold.
Yeah, great, thanks. Compression. I do think that it's something that is... sort of misunderstood quite a lot. A lot of people seem to think, especially starting out, you have to compress everything. Compression is you need to compress everything, where I'll only really compress something if I really physically have to. Like moving on from what we spoke about last on the space and stuff, as long as you've got good space in your mix and you've leveled and panned things correctly and such, you should be able to get away with not having to compress that much.
Well, let me say one caveat for me. I don't know if it's a caveat, but... I didn't compress anything for the first 5 years of my mastering career because I didn't understand what it did. So when I was going to put it into, I had a Smart C2, is it?
Allen Smart Research.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. I had one of those, which is basically an SSL compressor, and I never used it just because I thought, it's going to ruin it. I don't know what I'm doing, so I'm going to ruin things. So I just didn't bother having it in the chain at all, and I just used EQ and a limiter, which I think actually did me a favor, because I probably would have just done more damage than good, which is what you're saying. It's very easy with a compressor to actually push things, as we said about space in the previous podcast, push things into a place that where you don't actually want, you're losing space, so you don't actually want compression involved.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's two ways to use it. Like, one, using it for its actual intended use of like dynamics control, but the other one is for a characteristic. Like, even in mastering, like, say at Metropolis, you use, or I don't know if you use it or not, but there is like the Manly Slam there, or the Manly Very Mew. And they're sort of known as having a character, and you probably wouldn't put much compression on it. You just run it through the unit to get some character out of the unit.
That's pretty much what I do with a lot of compressors for mastering. Yeah, I've said before, it's a 1 dB job, if that.
Yeah. The difference between the mastering side of it is you're getting like 1 dB, if that. Whereas in sort of production, especially, I'm using it mainly for a characteristic, and I'm not really using it to... adjust peaks and stuff, like maybe at mix stage on a mix bus, just to rein it in a bit and get a bit more RMS out of the track. But mainly it's used for like the characteristic of a certain compressor. Like, I'll use a certain type of compressor on a certain element because I like the characteristic of that compressor on that element.
To get a louder mix, would you compress every channel, or compress like bass channels to then bring out the mix so you get a louder master?
Well, yeah, I mean, for bass especially, like, I try and compress the most compression I do in a mix would be on bass. Just it all does depend on the style of music that you're working on, but normally you want the bass to be as flat in terms of dynamics as you can get. So when it comes to the mastering stage, you've got a nice thickness to it, and you're not going to get those sort of rogue spikes of bass notes that come out. Like, because you always find it, especially in electronic music, like drum and bass and dubstep and stuff, a few, if your bass melody runs from quite low notes up to higher octave notes, the higher octave notes you might end up not hearing that much, and they seem a little bit flatter and a little bit missing in terms of bass. So you do have to compress it quite a lot in order to get it to seem constant in its volume. And that's how you get a thicker mix to then pass over for mastering.
I find that I tend to have to go back and ask for compression on things like pianos, where they'll have spikes in them, as you say, and those spikes will, the harmonics of those spikes comes really fast at my equipment, and so then it's going to distort. So what it needs to do is have a really long release time on it so that it doesn't decay as quickly, which means that I'm not then getting distortion, and I'll be able to push the track louder.
Yeah, and as well, I mean, and if you are compressing in your mastering stage, if you've got like a rogue peak in your piano file or the piano part, once that hits, everything else around that track is going to duck out the way of it.
It's going to
the compressor is going to pull down so much more. So you do need to get compressors for the use of dynamics control, because that's their intended use, that to control is, the
just,
dynamics.
But it is just so annoying when that happens, when you get something, and because you have to spend so much time manipulating the rest of the track to work with that compression setting at that point.
It's the same with vocals.
Yeah.
I mean, vocals kill a lot of the, especially when it comes to mastering, like you could have a really nice in the mix verse vocal. And as soon as the chorus comes in, you need that vocal to come up a little bit, but it comes up a little bit too much and it's not compressed correctly, or the dynamics aren't held as well as they could have been. So as soon as that vocal comes up, everything else seems like it's come down in compression. Everything else seems like it's gone down in volume when it hasn't. It's just being pulled down more by the compressor because the vocals turned up loads. So if it's done right in the first place, or even at recording stage, like compressing on the way in and committing to those volumes when you record, can sort of eliminate all these problems that you get in every single stage afterwards. So like, if you don't do it right at recording, you're gonna have to fix it in the mix.
But people are so scared right the these days, because they can, there's so many get out of jail cards, they'd rather record things flat and do the compression afterwards, wouldn't they?
Well, yeah, well, they'd leave it to someone else.
Yeah,
it's like, if it's probably a good thing as well, if you don't know what you're doing, don't do it.
Yeah.
Like, I when I was first sort of producing and started to mix records, I loved compression because I just loved plugins and I loved hardware compressors. And I'd buy loads of cheap compressors and just stick stuff through it because I thought it was what was done. And it was just like, oh, it's fun. Like, it's compressed stuff. And then you listen to it back and you think, like, one of the mixes I did a long time ago, someone sent back and I thought it sounded really good. And they said the snare's far too compressed. And I was like, what are they talking about? It sounds amazing. And then actually listening to it, was like, oh no, that it sounds like really, really thin. Had a nice crack to it, but it had zero body whatsoever because I just went in on it far too hard.
Have you ever used any MS compression?
Never. I've done it once to try it out, and I think it was when I was working for you.
Yeah.
And no, I'm not going to do it again.
Yeah, because I did have a setup where I could use MS compression, and I had it for the, and I was smashing the mids. And it was terrible. It kind of ruins the mix really quickly.
See, I know a lot of people that love MS compression, swear by it, and think it's amazing, and they can get mastering. More of an open for mixing mainly, but for mastering as well. It's people that mix and master tracks,
right?
And it's like they'll say that, oh yeah, but it anchors the middle, and you can get a solid center of the track. It's like, yeah, but it's
well. Let me tell you this: there's not one. Yeah. Professional mastering engineer I know that does it.
Oh, that's good to know.
So I think that kind of says it all, because I've searched and spoken to people to try and find out if that trick's being used, but it's not.
I mean,
really,
I could completely understand mid-side EQ. I can completely understand it. I can't understand mid-side compression, just for the fact that you're going to unbalance the your mix. Like, it's going to feel nice and free. I mean, if I was to do it, I would do it so the center was compressed more than the sides.
Yeah, of course.
That would just seem like the logical way, right?
Yeah, but so you've got a really sort of moving center bass vibe, and then I mean, you could, if you did a combination of multi-band and MS, which is just mental, you could then compress the kick and the low end and leave everything else okay. So all you've got is the mid, which is the mono in the middle.
Yeah, but then why not do that beforehand? Yeah, then why not just do that beforehand? I wouldn't do that over a whole mix. I wouldn't just go, right, let's compress everything that's in the middle. Because when you're thinking about it, if you're doing mid-side compression, you're compressing the kick with the bass and the main lead vocal.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, if you then multi-banded it, you could just compress the kick.
Oh yeah, I know, but then you just do it first. I mean, I don't understand it.
Which would
it's
be one of those insane. Things
I know people do it, and I mean, because of plugins as well, now you've got the ability to program mid-side into a compressor, and it's available to people. People are starting to use it, but it's not something that I would ever reach for. I mean, even if the mix was at a stage where I was like, this isn't right, I don't know what else to do, I still wouldn't at that point go, oh, what about mid-side compression?
No, I think it's a red flag. I think it's you've got to go, no, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. Because you're going, you know, I've had many a time throughout my career where I've had people look at me as if to say, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. When I'm And they were probably right at the time because I was trying a new technique out, which was just ridiculous. And I'm ruining their mix. And it's like they've spent ages getting their mix right. And then they come in because I've just got a new MS box.
Yeah, of course, that's what the problem is.
Smashing it. And it's like, that's what it is. Thanks for that. You haven't even listened to the track.
Yeah, no, it's a new toy. And it's like, oh, I've got to stick this on everything. Like when, like for my dissertation when I was at uni, I made a compressor, which to me, in my mind, put me in autopilot of compress every single thing that's going through anything.
Yeah, of course.
So every single thing that I had in my track, I was putting through the same compressor, but just different settings. And it was like, it didn't need to happen. But still on like the case of mid-side compression, if you've never done it before, I suggest trying to do it to see why you would then not want to have it done on your music. Like there's no point just going, oh, someone else said that it's not that good, so I'm not going to do it. Try it. And to see for yourself what it exactly is that it does, because it was something that was intriguing to me at the start. It was like, oh wow, like mid-side compression, I wonder what that's like. Then tried it and was like, what's the point? Like all I've done is make the side seem free and away from the center of the track. It was just too much.
Yeah, the track's just suddenly unglued it.
Yeah, the track's just suddenly gone, like it feels not together. It doesn't feel like a whole 3D piece of music. It feels like two separate things going, no, like I'm segregated, like I'm the sides and I'm the center.
Yeah.
But I didn't get on with it at all.
Which isn't what you're trying to achieve with MS. Even in EQ, you're not trying to do that.
No, all you're trying to do is accentuate the goodness of what's going on in the sides rather than reining in what's going on in the center, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And so do you ever parallel compress then?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, that was the next thing I was going to say. Like,
really?
Parallel, yeah. If I can, I'll prefer to parallel compress something than compress it in series.
Right.
Just for the fact that I know that the source material is going to stay as source material, like the integrity of the source material will stay as it's supposed to sound. And then I'll have like a smashed version just underneath to give it that compressed sound or that compressed characteristic while still keeping a nice transient or still keeping a nice clean signal. In the session that I change my template probably every 2 days or every other mix.
Right. It's not really a template then, is it?
I know, yeah. But I mean, I don't fully change it. It's just I tweak it a little bit. And I do find I add different compressors and more different parallel buses with different compressors on.
Right.
Just to see what they kind of, like the characteristic. Like an 1176 slammed is perfect for parallel compression. But then a VCA style compressor, like an SSL style compressor, which isn't as slammed but has got like the girth, is also really good for parallels, but on things like vocals, like LA2As, things like smoother opto circuits are really nice in parallel, again for things like vocals, things like guitars, synth lines. So there's loads of different ways to go around it. But
and they're the main compressors you're using, are they?
Well, pretty much, yeah. I'll use FETs. Well, I'd say FETs, Optos.
The main
Optos
ones that people are using now, is everyone on the Slate? Obviously, we all know that everyone's loving that. But
I mean, yeah, Slate's brilliant. Slate and UAD. I mean, the only real plugins that I do use nowadays is Slate, Fab Filter for limiting, and UAD. But UAD is really mainly just for the recording side of it and printing the plugins to the DAW, like printing it to tape, if you will.
I'm going off the Fab Filter.
Really?
Shock horror.
Why?
Because I'm just finding that it's sounding too compressed.
Really?
And bringing up too many highs.
Oh, really? I was going to say, are you changing the settings? But obviously, you know there's settings in there, right?
Like yeah,
the
yeah.
Different, yeah, yeah, like the
yeah,
advanced
I'm playing
settings.
With them. Yeah, no, exactly. But I don't know, I'm just kind of not feeling it as much as I was.
Oh, really? But, so what are you on now?
I've kind of gone more hardware with the TC6000.
Ah, okay, yeah.
And also, well, I've used on a few tracks, so it's not a guarantee. You know, I'm still using the Fab Filter on 80% of the work, but I've got into the UAD Precision Limiter as well.
I mean, you were using that a long time ago.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Before
ages.
The Fab Filter, that was like a staple. That was on. That was never off, was it? That was like always.
Yeah,
the
that's
last
right.
Thing.
And so I went back to it and thought, actually, it doesn't sound too bad. It kind of thickens things up a tad. Yeah.
But it's very easy to then completely ruin a dynamic of a track.
Yeah.
Like two increments to the right too much and you've like completely.
Yeah. I mean, limiters are probably, I think now for mastering, one of the main things that you need to have sussed.
I mean, a lot of mastering engineers use that, the TC, the 6000, didn't they?
Yeah.
It is one of the... I mean, isn't that the one that's got, like, reverbs on it and stuff
like
that?
Yeah,
like,
it's a full... It's pretty clean. A lot of people... There's a George Massenburg... getting a bit off topic here, but there's a Massenburg EQ in there as well, like the GML...
Oh, really?
...EQ that he's built for it. It's not supposed to be, like, the, you know, the 9500 that I use, but they... It's, you know... what he thinks sounds good, so I'm sure it's pretty tasty.
Yeah,
he's not exactly deaf. I'm also using the Vice DS1, you know, the which
digital
that's really nice. I mean, expensive, but really nice as a hardware piece of kit. But it's those kind, it's just trying to find something that, because I get something sounding really good analog, and then it's trying to transfer that with an extra 6 or 8 dB of gain. To
see the, I found that your before you were at Metropolis, I mean, even now that you're at Metropolis, you've still got that Avalon, right? And the compression on the Avalon, was it the 737 or something like that?
747.
747?
Yeah.
The compression on that was awesome.
Yeah, no, that's a serious bit of kit. That's like...
Really good.
If you haven't got one of those as a mastering engineer, then you're a knob. Because,
that sort of
no, seriously,
circuit,
it's harsh.
So nice.
But it is like so cheap for a piece of equipment for what it sounds like and for its versatility. I mean, you know, you can't use it on everything, but you can use it just to run through to just get the sound of the tubes. You need to change tubes. It's I've done loads of videos on it. It's it just sounds great for the for the money. And you can, the EQ is pretty nice.
Yeah, but I mean, just the compressor side of it, like the thickness, is one of those things, like just pushing it in and out.
It's also really clean. So it's not, it's not, it's kind of tubiness, but not in a, if you, with the Manly that I've got, it's, that's very creamy.
Yeah, and, I mean, yeah, the Manly is pure characteristic.
Like
it's got a real, pure tone.
Yeah, it's got a real sound to it, but I hardly ever use that, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, you can still get that with the Avalon, because you just push that button in, like there's a button for it, isn't it? There's like tube drive or something like that.
Which you
button.
Use, but it was still not, but it'll never be as mushy.
Buttery.
Exactly, for want of a better word, but it is that kind of sound, and that isn't my kind of sound, so I don't think that's why I use it.
I have found recently that on the mix bus, I'm doing a lot less compression than I used to. Right. I'm still compressing on the mix bus, but it's like 2-3 dB maximum
of compression. What compression? What compressor?
There's a couple of different ones, and I'm getting out of just using compression for the compression characteristic, and I'm starting to use a lot of more tape saturation.
Okay,
so like tape slate compression. Tape. Yeah. So that more, I find it's a warmer. Rain of dynamic than a compressor is. Like I find that I get, for the same peak level and RMS level, I get a thicker and louder track from saturation or tape compression emulation than I do from using a compressor. I find like it's a lot sharper on a compressor, and things sound a little bit harsher, a little bit more 1995, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like pure digital, really harsh, like harsh pop sound. Whereas with tape now, running it through tape emulation plugins like UAD and Slate, I'm getting a lot more body out of a track with the same RMS and the same peak level.
Yeah, see, I never use those virtual stuff for, you know, for that at all. I think it's probably because I'm spoiled for choice and I've got a load of other real
tape machines,
real things.
Actual tape machines.
Yeah, but I don't ever run through those either, to be honest, because they usually add too much noise.
True. I mean, when I had one of your tape machines, that Studer, I run mixes through it, and it was like, just because it was kind of there, but even though still most of the time it was just on in the corner of the room, just making sure that it was working, and I'd just use an emulation plugin because it was easier.
Yeah. Well, it's just cleaner, isn't it? I mean, that's the thing.
But, and more reliable.
Yeah.
Then have to wait half an hour for it to...
And it's always going to be the same every time.
Exactly.
But then isn't that... the world of plugins, basically.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, so I think we've kind of covered compression. Have we done enough? Have we spoken enough? If anyone's got any questions?
I mean, I think we could probably go on for hours and hours and hours about it.
Yeah.
But I think that's enough for now.
I mean,
maybe part two.
We haven't even got into settings yet, have we? And stereo links and...
Oh, stop it.
All kinds of stuff. But
doubling up and signal chains and maybe part two.
Okay, well, I think we'll sort of cover it as we go along anyway, because there's only a certain amount of equipment that we have in our arsenal. Anyway, well, so thanks for listening. Until next time, I've been Streaky.
And I've been Shay.
If you want anything else to do with mastering, then go to streakymastering.com or go to the YouTube channel where you can get more stuff from Shay and I talking nonsense, but in more of a short form, and you get to see our pretty faces. So thanks for listening, and goodbye.
Bye.